Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, Text Number 5. Parina visata svasmin.
Parina visata svasmin.
Matraya visva srigana.
Matraya visva srigana.
Chukso banyanyam asadya.
Chukso banyanyam asadya.
Yasmin lokasya. Achara.
Yasmin lokasya achara.
Parena.
Parena.
By the Lord.
By the Lord.
Visata.
Visata.
Thus entering.
Thus entering.
Svasmin.
Svasmin.
By his own self.
By his own self.
Matraya.
Matraya.
By a plenary portion.
By a plenary portion.
Visvasik. The elements of universal creation.
The elements of universal creation.
Ganaha. All.
All.
Chuksova.
Chuksova.
Transformed.
Transformed.
Anyonyam.
Anyonyam.
One another.
One another.
Asadya.
Asadya.
Having obtained.
Having obtained.
Yasmin.
Yasmin.
In which.
In which.
Lokaha.
Lokaha.
The plants.
The plants.
Char acharaha.
Char acharaha.
Movable and immovable.
Movable and immovable.
Translation. As the Lord, in his plenary portion, entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. Purport. The elements of cosmic creation are all matter and have no potency to increase in volume unless entered into by the Lord in his plenary portion. This means that matter does not increase or decrease unless it is spiritually touched. Matter is a product of spirit and increases only by the touch of spirit. The entire cosmic manifestation is not assumed its gigantic form by itself, as wrongly calculated by less intelligent persons. As long as spirit is within matter, matter can increase as needed. But without the spirit, matter stops increasing. For example, as long as there is spiritual consciousness within the material body of a living entity, the body increases to the required size. But a dead material body, which has no spiritual consciousness, stops increasing. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, importance is given to the spiritual consciousness, not the body. The entire cosmic body increased by the same process that we experience in our small bodies. One should not, however, foolishly think that the individual infinitesimal soul is the cause of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The universal form is called the Virata Rup because the Supreme Lord is within it in his plenary portion. Om Jnanati Manasya. Yanana Sadakya Shachurmitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So sometimes it is said that not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Krishna is sometimes referred to as the prime mover.
Or
Nimittamatram, he is the original cause. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Govindam the Adipurusha, the original controller. That is Krishna. So somehow or other, nothing exists without Krishna. Nothing is maintained without Krishna. And also everything ceases to exist by an arrangement of Krishna. The Sat Avikar, in the material world, everything is going through six transformations. It comes into being, it grows, it flourishes, gives off some byproducts, dwindles, and then ceases to exist. So these are the six transformations of material energy. But behind this whole process is simply taking place by Krishna. Therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the introduction of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is based on five lectures which Srila Prabhupada gave in London. And there, Srila Prabhupada speaks about the words Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he says that Chaitanya means the living force. He says Charita means characteristics, and Amrita means immortal. Or he says, so where do we find the immortal, manifestation of the living force? He said, our experience in this world is that all living force is temporary. So this is what is meant to be discovered, the eternal aspect of the living force, not the temporary. And then Srila Prabhupada continues to describe, and he says that matter in itself cannot move. He said, matter moves by the Supreme Lord. Where there is movement, it is due to the influence of the Supreme Lord. He says, a table has four legs, but it cannot move. That's all within that lecture, or in that introduction of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's interesting. Nothing can move without Krishna. It's Krishna who's ultimately behind everything. So wherever we see movement, we see Krishna. It's like that. So the whole material energy is a mechanism which gets into motion by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also described as pradana, pradana being the potential of the material energy. Then saiksata, the Lord, he glances, and by that glance is activating the potential of the material energy, which then begins to move. The three modes of material nature in pradana, it said, are in equilibrium and therefore non-manifest. But then the three modes of material nature begin to move, and sometimes one is predominant and another time one is predominant. And constantly, this is continuing. Prakriti kriyamanani guna karmi sarvasa ahangra vimudana kataham iti manyate. Then material nature is doing things. Although we think that we are the doer, it is material nature that is doing things, because the mechanism, the machine, has been set into motion by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the situation. And then we get the stavara and the jangama, or the moving and the non-moving parts of the creation. But ultimately, creation in itself is moving. Everything is moving. Nothing can remain as it is. There is the Greek philosopher Heraclitus who came up with this concept of pantarei, and he gave the example. He said everything is always flowing. He said you cannot step into the same river twice. Not possible. because the second time it's another river. It's no water. Mm. So in this way, we are observing. In reflecting on this aspect of the interference of the Lord with the material energy, we begin to realize that that we are fixed. We are not changing. The self is still the same. See, the Prabhupada gave an example. He said he was in Jagannath Puri, and he said, I came here many years ago. And many years ago, one of those beach guards that you have in Puri, the ones that wear the funny white straw hats, he said, one of them took me into the water and we were jumping in the waves. He said, but now I'm still the same person, but now I'm not jumping in the waves. He said, in his old age, just looking at the waves. He said, so something has changed. I was young and I was jumping in the waves, and now time has moved on and something has changed. Now I'm old. I'm no longer jumping in the waves. He said, but I have not changed. I'm still the same. And Prabhupada began to speak about the constant aspect of our nature, that which is fixed. The fixed aspect of our nature, the self, the soul. The soul is fixed. The soul does not change. The soul does not come into being. The soul does not cease to exist. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor in the future will there ever be a time when I will not, when I will cease to be. And the same applies to these janadipa, to these kings, these leaders of men. So the soul is not subjected to all this. So understanding this puts us into the position of an observer, of one who observes all the changes of the material world and who understands that we are not really part of it, since we are not changing. And that is the Vaishnav platform, the platform of the observer, the platform of taking a distance of what is going on, instead of being like completely identifying with all the changes. See, the mind is identifying with whatever goes on. Oh no. Oh yes, I don't know. The mind has different states and reactions to whatever's going on, constantly identifying with everything. But now, due to transcendental knowledge, we become an observer and we see there is a constant element in me. And let that constant element connect to the constant element within the creation. And in this way, that relationship does not change. All our relationships change. We have so many things, and then they're gone. In traveling, one of the big frustrations in traveling is that you forget things. Now I forgot my grinding stone for sandalwood. That is perfect travel grinding stone. The smallest grinding stone in the universe. Just right. Forgot what to do. That's the material world. So the relationships with material objects are temporary. You have something and then it's gone. Gone. And we don't like it. We want all these relationships to last. And then, of course, there's relationships with living beings. But what to do? Different living beings live different periods of times. Dogs, if they become 10 years old, they're very old. Like that. So then our dear ones, they die. That's how it works. Everyone living on different time scale. The world is so much confronting us with this moving of time and this inevitable goodbye. The inevitable goodbye in this world is something we're always confronted with. Not only with people, but with things, with situations. The inevitable goodbye, again and again. We don't want it, but it's just goodbye. What can you do? Such is the position. Yes, and then of course when it comes to living beings and when it comes to death, then it's too much. And that is why we have like all the arrangements to excuse me. Save people's lives. An ambulance, everyone pulls over to the side. Although the traffic is so tight, somehow or other that ambulance can pass. Because it's very important. It's on the cutting edge now. It's getting serious. You know what I mean? No more playing around. It's getting serious now. It's on the cutting edge. It's life and death. But life and death is not the cutting edge at all. That's not the cutting edge. That's the cutting edge in the eyes of the materialist who wants to prolong material life. There is this book of Simone de Beauvoir, and it was the wife of Sartre, an existentialist. So she has this book about a man who in the Middle Ages was involved with an alchemical process. And in, you know, like you see all these bubbling bowls of glass and things like this, and drops of liquid coming down, and all that's going on. And then he got the elixir of youth. Well, not bad. He took the elixir of youth, and he knew, now I have attained immortality. Yes. Said yes, but then his mind kicked in, and the mind said, yes, but how can I be sure? I know the formula is right. I know I've got it. But what? What if it's not true? How will I know? I thought, okay, we do an experiment, and as many scientists, they always take a poor animal. So in this case, he took a mouse. And he gave the mouse some drops of the elixir. And then he had the mouse in some sort of machine which crushed the mouse. A bit demoniac. But the next moment, whoosh, the mouse was back. And then he realized, I am immortal. I am immortal. And the next moment he realized, and I have to live forever with a mouse. Anyway, so then the book continues, you know. And there is a problem. There's a problem because he doesn't die. So his children are waiting for the inheritance, and the old man doesn't, you know, he doesn't die. So it's getting too much, you know. I mean, it's like time to inherit the house, and he's still alive. What do we do, you know? So they put some poison, and it doesn't work. Nothing works, it's too much. So, you know, and then the children die, and the old man is still alive. He gets married, but then, you know, after some time, the wives die, and he loves them very much, but then again, you know, to give them eternity and have to live with them forever, he's never came to that point that he's ready to, like, you know, have an eternal relationship. It's easy to say, you know, and then they lived happily ever after, but he's not entirely ready for that one. So he doesn't give any of the ladies eternity. But then the result is that, like, all his relationships are just breaking down, and, you know, flourishes, dwindles, ceases to exist, and all that. And so he loses all interest. So at one point in the book, He's just sitting in this asylum in a chair.
Like, and he's just totally not
doing anything anymore. He lost all interest. Because he can see it all leads to nothing. Now here we have existentialism, you know, the existentialist philosophy, which kind of points out the meaninglessness of everything in the world. And they are right, but they miss the meaningful side of spiritual life. That's all. Right? But it's true that, so the devotee, right, who is doesn't need to take an elixir to realize immortality, but who chants the holy name and then realizes the immortality of the soul, realizes that actually all these material endeavors are pointless. I'm gonna climb the mountain, and then you're on top. And wow, after 6 hours I reached the top, and what is there? A beautiful view. Wow, amazing. And you climbed for that for 6 hours, for that view. And if you climb longer, for days, and you climb Mount Everest, right? Yes, I once shared a room with a man who had been on one of these big, big peaks in Nepal, right? And he came down, and actually they went up with an expedition from base camp. Right? First they climb up to base camp, and then as they were going up, the doctor's brain, due to the change of pressure, started swelling in his head. So that's not good. That's not good when your brain starts swelling in the head. So the doctor got quite a headache, and which was a problem because he was the doctor. So, you know. Anyway, They had to let him down on a rope. So, okay, they let the doctor down on a rope. And so then they were without a doctor, and then they went further, and then there was an avalanche, and two men got swept over the edge. Goodbye. I talk about these inevitable goodbyes. That was one of them, on time. And then our friend, he was the last one. He was the last one. He made it to the top. He actually made it to the top. He stood on the top, and then he had these snow glasses, and then he took off his snow glasses because he wanted to see things. Then he came back down, and when he was the next day back in base camp, he was blind. Because one cannot put up the snow glasses up there because of the reflection of the light is very intense on the retina. So for a day he was blind. Anyway, then he got back. And then when I met him in the hotel, he had frostbite in two of his toes, and wasn't sure if his toes were gonna be saved. Goodbye, the inevitable goodbye. I used to have some toes, but somehow or other lost them in the mountains. So this is the situation. As observers, we are observing the inevitable goodbye, whether it's your toes or whether it's something else. So sooner or later, some object goes. And in this way, we are observing the material energy. And in this way, we see that life and death is not the cutting edge, although the material world makes it out to be. This is, now it gets serious, the cutting edge. No. The cutting edge is where we serve Krishna, where devotional service begins. That is the cutting edge, not life and death. Prabhupada said, death, it's, you sleep for a few months. That's it. You leave the body, you go into another womb, you sleep there a bit, and then you wake up in the womb. Oh my God, what am I doing here? Yes, and then, so, said, a good sleep. Well, doesn't sound bad. nice home sleep. So there is this thing, you know, like sleep soft, right? Sort of a Christian thing, you know, eternal sleep. So it's not eternal, it's a couple of months. Couple of months sleep, and then you're back. Back again. So it's not too serious, actually. Death is not the cutting edge, but devotion, to serve or not to serve, that is the question. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare was getting warm, but he didn't completely get it. The question is, to serve or not to serve Krishna? That is the question. And there is no other question. The only question. Are we serving Krishna or not? To serve or not to serve? That is the question. And that's the cutting edge, to serve Krishna. And the more we do so, the more we are not at all concerned. Just like we had our Sridhar Maharaj, right? And Sridhar Maharaj, he got like a problem with the liver and it was failing and it was a major issue. And so it wasn't going to last. He knew it, and the doctors told him, you know, it's not going to last. So anyway, so he started to do a very serious puja of Lord Srimadev. And so I said, Maharaj, I visited him one day in Mumbai, where he stayed at the time near the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And then when I came, there was a schedule. There was a list on the door, and the list was a schedule of activities throughout the day. And it sort of said 10 o'clock, we can wait the whole morning. He said Mangalarti, then little break, japa, then morning puja, then Bhagavatam class, then prasad, then an hour of bhajan, then, you know, like, a little more Bhagavatam discussion, and like this, he had a whole schedule. The whole day was booked up like this. So I arrived, and yes, it was just the time for a Bhagavatam discussion with Gopi Puranadana, who was reading from the commentaries of the Acharyas, and Sridhar Maharaj said, Gopi, you spend your life really well studying all these Bhagavatam commentaries. It's amazing. So like this, and then he said to me, can you sing this Sri Rupa Manjari Pada when it was time for the kirtan hour on the schedule? So I asked Maharaj, I said, Maharaj, why are you having such a schedule? He said, oh, well, if I don't have a schedule like this, people just come and they just talk about my liver all day. So in this way, he made a good arrangement to remain absorbed in Krishna consciousness. I said, Maharaj, why are you worshipping Lord Srinadev? He said, I want to overcome all fear. I want to become complete, overcome all fear of death. So then time progressed, and Maharaj somehow or another went to Mayapur. He was in Mayapur, and that was his final phase of life. At that time, he managed to still be there for the installation of the Panchatattva, and he was part of the Abhishek. But then, a week later, he left the planet. And then he was lying on the bed, and due to the failing liver, there was liquid filling up in the abdominal region, and it was swelling up, and it was enormous. Belly there, he's lying with an enormous belly on the bed. And different devotees came to the room, and someone touched the belly. And then Maharaj opened his eyes and said, it's boy. So he still had some sense of humor. And then a few days later, he said to his servant, he said, today I'm going to leave my body. And then the servant said, ah, you don't know. It's up to Krishna. You never know. You know? You never know. He said, no, today I'm going to leave. And he left later that day. Somehow or other. He knew. Actually, before that, Sridhar Maharaj was in the bathroom. And then Indrajumna Maharaj came. and knocked on the door and said, Sridhar, come out of that bathroom, because I'm going to say goodbye to you now, because I have to go, and this is going to be the last time I'm seeing you, so, you know, come out. And Sridhar Maharaj, he said, like, he opened the door and said, come in. We're boys anyway. So, and then Sridhar Maharaj, they saw each other for the last time in the bathroom and said goodbye. And on that last day when he just said, oh yes, today I'm going to leave. It's very casual. Something like, oh, I'm going to, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to do some shopping, you know, later on today. Something like that. Something, you know, nothing dramatic.
You know what's going to happen today? No, what? You know, I'm going to leave this world. No, the final moment, the ultimate test, the final exam, that final moment will come today. Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, the final moment will arrive today.
That was not Sridhar Maharaj. Sridhar Maharaj was sort of like, oh yeah, I'm gonna leave my body today. By the way, because he was completely fearless. He had completely no identification with the material body, and you know, he told. Days before he left, he told Brajabihari, he said, you know, I've been a good boy. I've been a good boy. Yeah, if you've been a good boy, then you can be fearless. Then you can be fearless. If we've lived a pure life, then we can be fearless. Then we can be free from anxiety. Yeah, but if you've done every sinful activity in the book, behind closed curtain, when people didn't look. And you just, in front of everyone, had like a very, you know, your hypocritical, holy face on, you know. And meanwhile, when they didn't look, you did every sinful thing in the book. Then, at the time of death, you'll be sweating. Oh yes, you'll be scared. Then it all comes at you at that time. But if one lives a sinless life, then one will be fearless. Just like the writer Goethe, right? Goethe is known to be a sharp thinker, philosopher, who understood deeper meaning of life. But then what happened was his doctor described. 3 days before he left his body, he was on his deathbed. And then he suddenly became overwhelmed by extreme fear. Extreme fear. Right? And such fear of death was there. Now, we're not sure of the cause. You know, of course there's Faust, you know, maybe he had a pact with the devil, who knows, right? Or maybe it was just the fear of all the sinful reactions that would come. That fear. For one who is sinless, there's no cause of fear. But how can one be sinless? Unless we have love for Krishna. It's not easy to be sinless. To never do anything. Yes, not so easy. Of course, like, when I was a kid, as many kids, I used to steal money from my mother's purse. I don't know if you did it, but I did it. Sinful wretch. Right? To buy candy, you know, I guess. Lots of kids do that, I guess. And then I read that when Prabhupada was a kid, that he also did it so that he could go to the Charlie Chaplin movies. So that it brought Prabhupada closer to my heart, I must say. I felt like there's hope for me. Hope for one who is like, you know, who was not an innocent child, but who was even as a child
already having sinful inclinations from last life. And then when I grew up, those sinful inclinations matured. But actually, although the sinful inclinations matured, they were still childish. Still childish. Just as Prabhupada used to say, when there was a playground called Children's Fairyland, and Prabhupada pointed at the city with his cane and said, Adults' Fairyland. So, whether we play as children with the material energy, or whether we play as adults with the material energy, it's all a waste of time. Football! The whole world is glued to the television. It's the final. Brazil is probably playing in some other country this time. It's the final. The whole world is glued to the television. One year I was in Paris, and that was the year that Brazil was in the final against France. And I was in France for some reason, in the temple. And you know, in the temple, there were some devotees, they went a few hours before the match on a japa walk, dressed in carnival clothes. And then there were the diehards, you know what I mean? Like, it's Maya, Prabhu's. It's Maya. We're not gonna, like, you know, be part of this, you know what I mean? And then where some of the diehard devotees, they fell down, and in the sense that at the end, they tried to get the TV working, but there was no antenna. Yeah, because it was a Hare Krishna TV, only a video, you know. So we don't have antennas of Maya, you know. So then, with a cloth hanger, you know, they tried with a cloth hanger somehow to get the TV working. And just only snow, the thing didn't work, you know. So then it's like, come on, God, you know, we're missing the whole thing. And then, you know, then suddenly, right, suddenly, the whole city of Paris roared, you know, goal! If you've ever heard a city roaring, it was amazing. And cars honking, and we knew it's 1-0 for France. We followed the whole match, you know, we followed the whole match. At one point, there were a few goals for France, right? And then there was one for Brazil, and then it was, ooh, Paris went, ooh, you know, Brazil scored one. it was really interesting. So the whole world absorbed, football. But Prabhupada said, right? He said, you think you are the player, but the truth is, you are the ball. You are the ball. You can be kicked out of here any moment. You think you are the player, but actually you are the ball. So like this, as observers in this world, seeing how everything is changing and transforming, and remembering our constant identity in this way, we can understand we are not the players. We are only the ball. And thus, we remain fixed in our eternal identity at the lotus feet of Krishna. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
She said that we kind of, it is quite common that one fears. It has some fear before time of death because of one's sinful activities. But it is said, like, a devotee who is engaged in Krishna service, the service itself is purifying us from all sinful activities.
Yes.
So, of course, there might be some reactions left, of course, but
yeah.
In general, it is said that if
yeah.
we follow the general process, these sinful reactions are kind of gradually taken away.
Yeah, and there's a passage on Sad Bhakti Yoga Madhuksha Jai that actually in the process of devotional service, all these reactions, sinful activities and actions will be removed. Yes. And even if some remain, still, you know, we also know that devotional service does one more thing. It doesn't just, like, you know, it's not like devotional service, you know, it washes so white, you know, it washes whiter than white. There is no more powerful means to wash the heart than devotional service. By devotional service, because devotional service washes whiter than white. And it's not that it's some sort of transcendental washing powder, you know, that washes the heart from sins. Devotional service does something else. Devotional service purchases Krishna. So even if you have some sinful remnants left, it purchases Krishna. It is Sri Krishna Akarsani. It attracts Krishna. So therefore, you know, the devotee also feels more and more confident. Okay, I may not be a pure devotee. I know what to do. You know, but Krishna is very kind. And you know, I mean, I tried for so many years, I did so many things. I'm sure Krishna will protect me. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm no doubt. And maybe I'm not completely spotless, you know, but I have no doubt. Krishna is so kind. He will surely remember me and take care of me. So in this way, even when one is not completely sinless, we can still trust Krishna will be there. Yeah, that's even more important, I think, that devotional service washes so white, you know. Get a white heart, free from any sin. Yes.
But if we fully depend on him,
yes.
Then what is to think about that?
Yeah, okay, but you can, if we fully depend on Krishna, what is there to think about that? That's true, but we see that, like, Goethe, as an example, was a man who was throughout his whole life very philosophical, very aloof, not influenced at all by the modes of nature, because he could always see deeper. But then suddenly he lost it at the time of death, because at the time of death you go into another state of consciousness. It all comes at you, you know what I'm saying? It suddenly comes at you. I mean, it's finished. It's up now. My time is up. So that is one of the forces that is there. My time is up. And to have that dependence on Krishna then is more difficult than now. Now, you know, yeah, it's almost time. Depending on Krishna, we'll have time. Mm-hmm. But suddenly when you know you have no more time, you're on death row, it can come at you at that time. So that's why it's
One faces death in this life also.
Yes, death we face.
He just forget. Yeah. He just leave it on.
Yes. Yes. That's philosophy. And if we have that faith, that deep faith, Krishna is always there. And if we are sinless, then there is no anxiety. If we have that dependence on Krishna, we're sinless. If we're sinful, then some anxiety can be.
Commit some sins, knowingly or unknowingly, it happens. But
okay.
If you just leave it in the hand of the Lord.
Yeah. If you step on living entities and you kill them, while being engaged in the service of Krishna, then you're being protected from the reactions of those things. But if you take one step away from devotional service and you step on some living entities, then the reactions are yours.
That is knowingly you're committing suicide.
Killer of the soul. Yeah, so it's still a fine line, because it's not so easy to always walk the path of pure devotional service. I mean, we know it, but for a whole life, life is long. You know, when you're young, you can live for an idea. Huh? You're young, you can have an idea, I'm gonna do it. And you do it, you know what I mean? Because you're young, you know what I mean? You throw all your energy into the idea, I'm gonna be a pure devotee, I'm gonna do it. But just wait till time comes. And time will make you tired. And time will make you weak. And time will take away that fighting spirit. But even the strongest fighter cannot fight anymore. Because pure devotional service cannot be a fight. And then you will just feel like, I can't do this anymore. I just gotta be myself. And then you come to the stage, you gotta be yourself. Say, well, and then it's easy to sing the song, I am what I am, you know. And then, you know, oh well, what can I do? And suddenly, that person who was the emblem of seriousness, the emblem of like dedication to pure devotional service, what happened? What happened? How did the change come about? And in one's old age, can no longer live for an idea and has to become more and more natural, then one has to be naturally Krishna conscious. Then one has to be very, very deep. Otherwise, we're going to just turn to the material energy somewhere for some shelter. And then in the course, we may unduly commit some unwanted activity. What to do? I am what I am.
But does it not that Krishna makes you to do that?
No. I was in Jaipur and the bank manager said, I am fully surrendered. Yes, fully surrendered to Krishna. Yes, 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 whatever he wants. When he wants me to live in the temple, I will live in the temple. But now he wants me to be bank manager. So now I'm bank manager. But when he makes me go to the temple, to the mandir, I will go. I will surrender. Whatever he wants. Krishna is in control.
So if one surrender up to that point, Maharaj, he wants
anything Krishna wants, I am doing. Yes. Whatever he wants. No. Definitely, yes. No, yes, no, I will do, yes. Jarur. I am very manager. Yes. Surrender to Krishna. Yes. Fully. 100%.
But some people are like that.
I know them. Yeah, some people are like that. 100% surrendered? Yes, if you are a pure devotee, 100% surrendered, you can be anything. You can be a bank manager, you can be whatever you are, but the essence is that Sarvopad Ivini Muktam. I am not a bank manager. I am not this body. I am not Indian, I am not American, Swedish, or whatever. I am not any of these things. I am the eternal servant of Krishna and nothing else. Then you can do these jobs in the material world, yes. But not a butcher. And even bank manager, it's not the best, with all the black money and everything. Better just live a pure and simple life.
I have heard in one lecture
that louder and more clear so everyone can hear.
I have heard in one lecture that all the opulent people we have around us, whether they have money, power, influence, whatever, some time in their life or previous life they were connected with devotional service somehow or other, but they forgot. So I was thinking, like us, if we are not pure enough, some fear will be there.
The Adyanta Sukriti.
Will we remember the next, if we don't make it this life, next life we'll be able to remember? Because some fear is there, actually.
Fear. So if somehow or other a person has come into contact with devotional service, that's the mercy of Krishna. Like in Stockholm, there's so many people who have been touched by devotional service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, ching ching boom, ching ching boom. Or so many other ways. There's no doubt about it. And they don't remember, they've forgotten. Now what? That Agyata Sukriti, that unknown spiritual advancement, will not be lost. Even if they don't remember, in the next life what it will do, it will give them a favorable inclination towards devotional service. They'll again get an opportunity to get in contact with devotional service, and due to the Agyata Sukriti, means what they don't remember, they'll be favorably inclined. So whether you remember or don't remember, it will bring you again in connection with Krishna, and you will be favorably inclined. If you do remember, then you even have more opportunity. So therefore, Abhyasi yogi yuktena cetasananyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati praktisintyayush. We should practice throughout our whole life over a prolonged period. Then we become fixed. Saraimana Krishna padara vindayo. We have to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna nisevya. Whatever you do, fix the mind on Krishna. So it means, whether you want to make movies, or whether you want to play a drum, or whether you want to be a brahmachari, a grihastha, or whether you want to be Ayendra told me, like when I became a temple president of Vrindavan, the local GBC, who appointed me as president, one of the first things they told me to do is to say, there's a rumor that Ayendra has taken Babaji from a picture. Why don't you ask him about his ashram? So I did it. And then he said, so I said, Ayendra, what's your ashram? And he said, my ashram is a Brahmahasta Vanyasi. So we have all kinds in this movement. We have brahmacharis, we have grihastas, and we even have brahmahasta vanyasis.
What is that?
That's Oscar Yendra. A brahmahasta vanyasi. Yes. It is said that amongst the five, there are five principal things in devotional service which very quickly can give love of God, and one of them is association with devotees or relationships with devotees. We depend on relationships with devotees. Alone, where are we? Alone, how strong can we be? We are weak. We need support. We need friendship. Association with devotees can be that we chant Hare Krishna together, we do kirtan together, we take prasadam together, all these things. But it's difficult, and that is beneficial, but it's very difficult to maintain that if there's no friendship. Right? When you are in the middle of a group of devotees and we all chant Hare Krishna together in front of the deities, very nice in the kirtan. But if you feel I have no friendship with any of these people, then it's just very hard to remain motivated to do it. Right? And then the mind just starts to dwell and think, what am I doing here? You know, why am I here? I don't feel I belong here. I don't feel at home, and so on. So, therefore, when we speak about relationship and sadhu sangha, friendship is actually very important. And when we have some friendship, somehow or other, with some devotees, we should look after that friendship. We invest in it and make it stronger and make it better. Never lose our devotee friends. We need friendship like anything. It sustained us. And again, as we're getting older, we realize these things more. When we're young, you know, we're just living for an idea, right? We fix our mind. I'm going to be a pure devotee and I'm living for, you know, sadhu sangha. Yes, I need sadhu sangha. All right, you know, we're with the devotees, we're chanting together. But as we're getting older, we're getting a little softer. We're getting the fighting power to fight is gone. And we just really feel more and more, I need friends. I really need friends. Therefore, let us, when it comes to friendship, I think the first thing is, let's give friendship. The more we give friendship, the more we will get, just by the principle of karma. Give friendship and it will come. So this is the key, you know. Like, don't know, sometimes we have bad karma and as a result we've got a curse on relationships, you know. You may have kuja dosa, you know, and then marriages don't work, right? It's in the chart, you know. It shows the karma. Kuja dosa, you know, forget it. Marriage is doomed. Right? It's not going to work. I mean, you know, that these things exist. So, sometimes due to karma, relationships don't work. But by giving friendship, surely, karma. Friendship will come our way, and we need it. So friendship is very important. And friendship, you have to conquer people by doing something they really love. Right? Not just something nice, but something they really, that's dear to them, that touches their heart, and you do it for them. Then, you know, everybody will melt. Eh? Everybody. So, people walk around with a lump of ice in their chest and you have to defrost it by doing something that they really like. Then they melt. Otherwise, they just walk around with lumps of ice in their chest and cold faces. Hare Krishna Prabhu. I couldn't, you know. I mean, you know, it doesn't affect me whether you're here in this world or whether you're going to leave your body. I am equipoised. No. We want people to care, we want devotees to care. We need love. There's no doubt about it. Real friendship. Krishna Bhagavan.
Maharaj, you spoke about good devotional service and that sometimes there is this tendency that we try to drive it on our own strength, but after sometimes just this power is not there anymore because we get tired. This means to achieve good devotional service, it's just like practicing Pankajati. Pachanga
Bhakti
and just keep patience and determination and
we'll
just make it like that?
Yes. In the beginning, we sit down and we you know, and it's the time for initiation and we just promise, you know, to follow these four regulative principles. Maybe we even have a little fear, you know. I mean, will I be able to do it? Perspire a little. And then, you know, the other day, I gave a lecture, an initiation lecture, and there was no fire. We were in Switzerland, there was one person, there was no fire because we were in a holiday place and couldn't make a fire there, and outside there was a fire ban, so there was no fire.
And then I said, but the vows itself are a fire. The vows itself are a fire. And gradually you have to offer more and more to those vows, to the flames of that fire. Everything has to be offered to that fire. All your independence has to be offered in the fire of those vows. In the beginning it seems to be not so difficult to follow the four regulated principles. I can do it. Yeah. In Chanti 16, I can do it. But over time, it takes more and more like a fire. You have to offer everything in that fire to actually maintain it. That's the nature of the vows. So you have to make more sacrifice now. That's what Krishna wants. He wants everything. Boom. That was enough. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, jai, Srila Bhagavatam.
His Holiness Kanava Kanana Swami Maharaj ki
jai.